Welcome to Recollections. Geordie and David Kilby with you for the next half an hour or so. Looking this week at the world of flexi discs and cardboard discs.
And that was a cardboard disc, and the record companies had a bit of a problem back in the early days because record production was expensive, 78s and later on 45s, and also distribution as well. How could you distribute your product? Well, they came up with a solution in cardboard discs and flexi discs because they could be inserted in magazines, they could be on top of margarine labels, on cereal boxes, and wide distribution was possible. And of course, they devised other areas in which they could use flexis and cardboard discs.
I guess they were much cheaper to post if you wanted to send them out as well. A famous example of a flexi disc, I guess, are the Christmas messages that were sent out by the Beatles each year to their fan club between 1963 and 1970. And you usually had a little bit of Beatles fun and a few off-the-cuff sort of renditions of Christmas songs that they'd either written or were covering.
I'm looking at a Johnny Devlin cardboard disc, and it cost 1 and 9 pence. It says on the back of this that it brings you the very latest hits, sometimes long before the local record release.
They could be pressed easily and distributed easily. So today we're going to play a few tracks and tell a few stories relating to some of the discs that are in our collection. The first one we're going to take a look at is a flexi disc that was released in the early 1970s for Wizard Records. This was to commemorate the beginning of Wizard Records, but some of the big acts that were on Wizard at this point, Rick Springfield, Garth Young, Ross Wilson and Ross Hannaford, and also the Daltons, Marsha Hines also recorded for Wizard later on. But when they kicked off in 1973, they brought out this disc.
Listening to the sounds of Wizard, Australia's new record label. Wizard's Rick Springfield.
And then you got a little bit of Rick, and following on that, you got some of Garth Young. The track that we're going to hear a little bit more of, though, is the tune Paranoid, which features Ross Wilson and Ross Hannaford. And according to Ross Wilson, there's an interesting story with this track.
It's ascribed to Ross Wilson and Ross Hannaford. But the actual recording is Daddy Cool live at the Muchmore Ballroom, and it came from the album The Last Drive-In Movie Show, which was recorded as our last performance before we disbanded after being together for approximately 2 years. The song was actually written with the band I had prior to Daddy Cool, which was called The Party Machine, and we used to play that song in The Party Machine. When we did the live album, live at the TF Muchmore Ballroom, it was a late entry. I just said, let's do this song, you know, because we want to put some new stuff on our live album. And we did it, and it's got a lot of energy in it because it's the first time we'd actually played it.
And without any further ado, here's the track.
Wizard's Ross Wilson.
Ross Wilson and Ross Hannaford and their track Paranoid from the Wizard Preview flexi disc of 1973. And just taking a look at that flexi disc, it was produced for Wizard Records by Ambassador Records in Sydney. And Ambassador Records are responsible for pretty much all of the flexi discs that are spread out across our studio here at the moment.
And there are literally dozens of those. So the question is, who were Ambassador Records?
And that's something that Matthew Davies from the National Film and Sound Archive can quite capably answer.
Ambassador Press were a general printing company. They produced publications and you know, a range of printed products. And in the 1960s, they hit upon the idea that being able to press flexi-disc records would give them another product that was something that was interesting to their customers. So they invested in a flexi-disc printing press from Japan. Very big machine. It's actually a lot bigger than a regular record press. Quite a finicky little machine too, but they produced flexi discs for many, many years, really, until they fell out of fashion as people started to put CDs on magazines and those sort of things. The press came here. We kept it in storage for a while, and it's actually currently, though, being refurbished by some collaborators of ours, the Vinyl Factory in Sydney, who produce very high quality vinyl pressings, but also wanted to diversify into flexi discs.
So there you go. At the moment, we're unable to press a flexi disc, but very shortly there might well be the capability to produce flexi discs once more. I'm intrigued by how they go about making them, though. Some of these are quite thick, some of them are a little bit thinner, some of them, all of them look fairly cheap.
And played on 33, George, as opposed to 45.
Yeah. Matthew Davies knows a little bit more about the process of producing these kinds of discs, too.
Well, the particular process of making the plastic flexi discs really started in the 1960s, and it's as far as we can tell, it's actually a vinyl sheet, so it's a thin PVC sheet, so it's similar material to vinyl records, but instead of feeding a biscuit, you know, a blob of vinyl into a press, it comes on a roll, and the sheet on a roll feeds through the machine, gets heated up by an electric heating system, which again is different from the regular vinyl pressing. Once it's warm enough to take an impression, then it's a fairly routine process there. Steam pressure is used to push the stamper onto the sheet, and voila, you have a record.
We mentioned a little earlier, though, that there are a couple of different kinds. So the flexi discs are one, the floppy plastic or vinyl type discs are one, but there's also quite a history involved with cardboard discs as well. And there's a little bit of a difference between the two. Here's Matthew again.
The cardboard discs, the signal is pressed into a coating of gelatin or plastic on the cardboard surface. Generally, I think the flexi discs have a sound quality that's closer to that you'd get from a full-blown vinyl record. The cardboard discs typically are smaller, you know, postcard size, so they're quite short. The quality's not quite as good as the plastic flexi disc.
And that's you'll get to hear a little bit of one or two of them shortly. And the quality's not quite as good, but the pictures on them are a heck of a lot better.
Single-sided, we might add too, not double-sided like a normal 45 record. And Kingsley Records also had their own orchestra, the Kingsley Hit Parade Orchestra, who backed a lot of artists.
So we've got Kingsley were, I think, the company that were producing these cardboard discs primarily in Melbourne for the Melbourne market. And in Sydney, I think there was the
Penguin Records. Look like they're out of Sydney. They may not have been the only two companies. There's others registered here too, Jude. Prestaphone
were one. And look, there may have been cardboard discs produced in markets for Brisbane and Perth, Adelaide as well. I don't know that we've seen a lot of those, though.
No, Presto Disc, I should say, Jude, not Prestaphone.
Cardboard discs, they were very much the rage in the late 1950s, heading into the early 1960s, before Ambassador, I guess, set up their operation in the country. Ernie Sigley was one of the vocalists in his early days who, in fact, he was the first one to appear on a Kingsley's pop record, cardboard disc, but he wasn't the only great vocalist.
There were some very good singers on there. Frankie Davison was on the cardboard, Heather Hoard, Gaynor Punning, Dorothy Baker, some really top singers of that era, you know. And the amazing thing with them is that someone gave me one recently, and that you can still put them on a record player, and it's still a good sound.
And that is Ernie Sigley speaking about cardboard discs.
Yeah, they were cheaper, as we said, one and ninepence there for the Johnny Devlin one. But for the artists, was it lucrative for them?
Yeah, it was quite good money, yeah, in those days. I think it was something like $400 or $500 or something, and I think I was getting £3.18 at six a week, you know, so the money was pretty good.
Which is indicative of the fact that they probably got rid of a few.
They actually sold very, very well because they were originally made on the cardboard, and we used to flog them at Meyer in the city, in Melbourne, and, you know, we'd just get around and sign the autographs because it was quite easy, a lot easier signing an autograph on on a cardboard record than it is on a vinyl.
So that's Ernie Sigley, and he, interestingly, you know, obviously had a pop career that went well beyond the release of his couple of cardboard discs in the late 1950s. Many years later, though, when he had moved away to Adelaide and then come back to Melbourne again, he told me this great story about running into the owner of Kingsley.
When I come to live here in Melbourne, I was walking my dog in the next street, and this guy pulled me up, and he was the boss of Kingsley Records. Quite a nice house too. I said, well, obviously you did well out of the cardboard records.
So Ernie did two, or Ern, as he was at the time, Ern Sigley, cut two records for Kingsley's pop record company. One was She Was Only 17, and the other was this track, Sugar Moon.
Oh, Sugar Moon, come out tonight. Great.
Sidney Sigley doing Pat Boone's Sugar Moon. We had to put that on the turntable, but it just wouldn't play when we first started. We had to use sticky tape to tape it down onto the turntable.
Could you tell?
But there are instructions on the back of a Penguin record card. Penguin Records will play at least 500 times. They will not damage your needle. They may curl slightly, well, that's true, under heat, but will simply bend back to shape. Well, that's probably not quite so true. But there is a tip. If it is bumping your equipment, then you simply cut off the corners. And a lot of people just didn't just cut off the corners. They cut right around the outside track, thus damaging the beautiful pictures, I might add, too, George.
You're listening to Recollections, David Kilby and Geordie Kilby, trawling through the world of music laid down on either cardboard disc or flexi disc. And it's an eclectic range of musicians that that we've got for you in this program. Still to come, where you'll hear something from the Skyhooks, but also from Winifred Atwell, two very different corners of Australian pop history. And also, we'll look at least one example of something that was a very popular thing with FlexiDisc for a long time, and that's producing songs and commercials for particularly for political organisations. But before we get there, Greg McKeitch is obviously well known as the songwriter, or one of the key songwriters for the Skyhooks. In the very, very early days of the Skyhooks, long before Sheryl was the lead singer, they had a song called Sweet Sister, which sort of did the rounds but never quite made their first album, never quite made the second album. They went back and revisited it in the late 1970s with the idea of perhaps putting it on their final studio album. The track never made that album either, and it sat around for some time until From the Vault magazine decided to revive it for an issue in which Ian McFarlane was writing a very large article about the band. So I guess this is another way that these things were distributed. We mentioned a little earlier they came out attached to magazines. Greg McKeitch has got some interesting ideas about this, though. Obviously, the song had been kicking around since the early 70s. It wasn't until 1988 issue of From the Vault that it finally raised its head.
In 1988, we weren't quite at the CD age, or perhaps some acts were making CDs, but a flexi disc would certainly be a kind of a retro thing at the time. I tend to recall flexi discs as something probably from the 60s.
And Matthew Davies said the quality wasn't too bad, but I don't know whether Greg entirely agrees.
They're not known for their optimum sonic quality. The poor cousin of vinyl, I'd say. There are those who still think that vinyl is a superior medium for recorded music, and I'm inclined to agree for some things, yes.
And whilst vinyl and flexi-discs in particular may seem like a slightly old way of doing things, he had an interesting insight, I think, into the way flexi-discs were treated at that time.
You could say they were a bit like the free MP3 file on the website. You could slip them into the rock magazine and pop magazine as a bonus thing, and they'd kind of make it to the newsagents in one piece most of the time.
So this track was only really available on this. I don't know that either this or the other. In fact, I think one of these might have made a release subsequently on CD, but Guitar Thunders in My Hand, which is the other track that's featured on this flexi disc, for many, many years these were only available in this format. So we'll give you a listen to, this is quite a rare Skyhooks track. It's called Sweet Sister.
Shirley there from Skyhooks and Sweet Sister, as George said, a rare track, and the other one even rarer on that flexi disc, may never have been released in another form.
This is Recollections, Geordie and David Kilby, on your radio or on your MP3 player, however you wish to digest us. Pity we can't be on your turntable on a flexi disc, but
taped down.
Which is what we had to do with this this next track as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we certainly did. In fact, we had to send for more tape, really, to get this one played. As we said, diverse range of artists on flexi disc and cardboard discs, and big names too, like, as we said, Skyhooks and Ross Wilson, Johnny Devlin. But I was surprised to see Winifred Atwell crop up with a lovely picture disc of Winnie in Perth. It says on the label here, a section of the vast crowd of 10,000 people who greeted Winifred at Perth Airport. But backing Winifred Atwell for more than 10 years was one of the icons of Australian rock and roll. And Leon Isaacson was around pretty much when rock and roll started. And I was very surprised to hear that he backed Winifred for more than 10 years. And I said to him, gee, that would have been a bit tame.
Oh, it certainly was. Actually, I'd been working with Johnny O'Keefe, and I thought, gee, this is going to be a bit tame playing for Winnie, you know, like Black and White Rag and all that stuff. But actually, it turned out to be quite the opposite. She'd sort of lull them into a false sense of security with Black and White Rags and all that stuff. But by the time it got to the end of the show, it was almost like a Led Zeppelin concert. It really was. And that's the way she wanted it, you know. She wanted it really raucous and loud. And of course, the last 20 minutes or half an hour of the show was her taking encores while we were screaming away in the background. You know?
And Winnie liked Leon as a drummer because too often her backing band had been, the drummer was what Winnie called a tapper. It just tapped away on the drums, and Leon's not a tapper. But what was Winnie like?
Ah, she was just lovely. Just lovely. I mean, she was a star from the old school, you know? And we just sort of basked in her reflected glory, if you like, because we were treated like royalty when we travelled with Winnie. There was always limos to pick us up, and we stayed in the best places, and Winnie made sure of that as well.
And she was, as you say, hugely popular.
Well, actually, she was the biggest drawing act, if you like, in the whole of Australia at the time. You know, if we went anywhere, it was just packed out.
I wondered if he had a band name behind Winnie.
They always wanted to just find a name for the band, which was silly, you know, because it was Winnie's band. And so we just call ourselves the Zarthoff Brothers. Somebody was in the car and dropped an ash, and look out, you'll burn his ass off. We thought, oh, burn his ass off, that sounds like a Russian composer. And then it went from burn his ass off to blew his ass off, and it was just ridiculous. But all these people used to believe that we were the Zarthoffs, and we actually did a Cossack dance, and because we used to go to all these mayoral meetings and things with our dinner suits on, and we all looked immaculate, you know, so they believed everything we told them. But, I mean, we were just old ex-rockers. Really?
It was always hard travelling back in those early days, but with Winifred Atwell, it was an entirely different scene. She was a wonderful person for whom to work.
Every year, Winnie had a month off, and she'd go back to her flat in Mayfair. You know, I mean, who lives in Mayfair? And she'd put us all on a retainer. We'd be getting quite a few $100 a week or whatever it was in those days. And we had the choice of taking the retainer or actually going with her to stay in her flat in Mayfair. And the only guy that actually ever took it up was the guitar player, Jimmy Doyle. He went over there and he said it was fantastic, you know. I was married and all that stuff, so I couldn't really go. So we'd stay and I'd still be getting paid.
Unheard of.
For the whole month that she was away.
So a very generous person.
Oh, yeah, she really looked after us. I mean, Lou always used to come up, and I used to get this. I mean, it doesn't sound like much now, but there was always the $50 note in the hand at the end of each week. And I'd say, what's that for, Lou? He said, that's goodwill money. So they really looked after us because they loved the band. It was the best band they ever had when Jimmy Doyle and Mike Lawler and myself was playing. The band was really fire. It was just a rock and roll band in a way, you know, but all good musicians, and we really nailed it, you know.
Well, as I said, the Cardboard Disc was cut in Perth, and I wondered whether Leon went to Perth with Winnie.
That was a favourite place of ours, you know, because when Winnie used to arrive in Perth, they all thought that she was just arriving from England or overseas or something like that. And in actual fact, I mean, at the time she lived at Narrabeen, and we just used to fly in and do the concert hall.
And here's Winnie herself.
Hello, everyone. This is Winifred Atwell. I would like to place on record my sincere thanks to each and every one of you for your wonderful support during my tour. So thank you again, Dizzy Fingers. Thank you.
concerts like Led Zeppelin. I'll never forget that line. That's fantastic.
I think they might have been before Leon joined up, actually.
That's Dizzy Fingers, the wonderful pianist Winifred Atwell. You're listening to Rare Collections, and we've got one more slice of musical history to play for you before we go. And it comes courtesy of, well, they're billed on the record as the National Party Orchestra and Singers, but they were in fact members of the Alan Brown Big Band, who, if you're in Brisbane, you may have seen the Alan Brown Big Band. They've been a staple of the music scene there for many decades, and seen many great players go through their ranks over the years.
And started off in a radio station, Jordan.
It's interesting, actually, the origins of the band, and who better to tell us than Alan Brown himself?
Well, it started as the 4IP Big Band. It was a rehearsal band where a bunch of kids used to get together and play, and the manager of 4IP came along and said, Big Bands are back, so we're going to have a 4IP Big Band.
Over the years, they've had a number of, as I mentioned, many talented players go through the ranks. One of note, though, that might ring a bell with many of you was a very young singer by the name of...
Kerry Ann Kennelly was the first girl singer we had with the 4IP Big Band. I remember her very fondly. She'd never sung with a big band and was so impressed with all this noise behind her. And, of course, she was still at school, I think. She used to do a kids' television program in Brisbane in the early days. So she came straight from that with the band, and we used to, in those days, play at all sorts of places, like half-time at the football and then concerts around the schools.
Now, I should point out that Kerry-Ann is not the vocalist you're about to hear on this record.
So what was the connection then between the Alan Brown Band and the National Party?
The manager, the owner, rather, of 4IP was Sir Frank Moore, who was very much involved with the Country Party. And that was recorded when it changed the name from the Country Party to the National Party. It launched at a National Party function at the old Lennon's Hotel on the top story. I remember that because I'm frightened of heights.
I love that. So the disc was recorded there, at the studios, then released at that function, and then subsequently the disc was available throughout Queensland.
As far as I recall, definitely at the event, and then they did a tour of Queensland, like a political tour, and I'm certain it was handed out at all of the functions there.
It's called Sing It Loud, and this is the National Party Big Band Orchestra. The National Party Orchestra and Singers, written by Ron Stevens and lyrics by Warren Cox. They're the story there, courtesy of Alan Brown.
Yeah, I think they're two of the members of the orchestra there too, Geordie. Not the only time politics got their nose into flexi discs and cardboard discs, because we have here a personal message to the voters of Warringah from the sitting member then, the late Ted St. John. And also Winston Churchill's funeral came out on flexi disc. You could learn to play golf with Bruce Devlin via a flexi disc. The highlights of the Commonwealth Games. There was just no end to it.
There's a lot of fun to be had in collecting flexi discs. We've certainly enjoyed trawling through some of the ones in our collection. I hope you've enjoyed hearing some of the ones from the collection as well. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do so via the Rare Collections page on the local ABC Radio website. We're back every fortnight with new expeditions into the history of Australian pop music. Until next time, thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to this 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to this or any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.